Ryan Smith MP is a 35-year-old in the Democratic Alliance who's been given two hospital passes. We can talk about that in a moment. I'm sure he's up to the challenge, but really to succeed Emma Powell-ish. But we're going to be talking more about Taiwan, microchips, multiprocessors, the things that make the world go round, and we in South Africa don't kind of have a clue because we've just alienated the sole supplier of what makes industry work. Ryan, good to be talking with you. And I'm going to talk about your first hospital pass. Well, I think it is to be the constituency head for Knysna. My goodness, of all the places in the country where the Democratic Alliance is getting uphill, that's got to be the one that that occupies most people's minds. What are the developments there, and how did you end up getting that as your constituency?
Well, look, we don't really get too much of a choice. What happens after the election is you get sort of an opportunity to motivate which constituencies you would like as an MP, but those are allocated in the DA by the provincial leadership, and you basically just end up with what you get. And as we know, Dion George was the former constituency head in Knysna, and he became a national minister and I think had a little bit less time to devote to the constituency, and so it came to me. And I mean, look, there are certainly worse places to be in terms of scenery. It's a beautiful place to be in, whether you're working or not. But it's a wonderful town. It's got so much potential. It obviously had a bit of a hiccup politically in the last election. There's a very, very sort of splintered ANC-led coalition there. But I think the voters have learned their lesson, and we hope that we'll get a DA majority back in 2026.
So are you making any progress, though, in fixing the place? Or can you, when you're on the opposition benches there, as you are
it's
now?
It's very difficult in opposition. Possible? Yeah, very, very difficult in opposition. Look, we do what we can to hold the coalition accountable. There have been several developments. I mean, the Provincial Department of Local Government has found three of the councillors guilty of misconduct, and there's been a process to fire them and institute sanctions against them. So there's a lot going on in the council. There's also a process to place Knysna under administration, or at least to consider the possibility of administration under a Section 139 process. So that's underway as well. So, you know, Knysna is not doing great. Huge problems with wastewater treatment, huge problems with water supply, which, you know, plagues many municipalities across the country. But thankfully, having a DA-run provincial government means that there's a lot more oversight and a lot more accountability, I think, in that council, which helps. So it has its problems, but they're not unfixable. And we're doing as much as we can to rebuild the DA structures there and make sure that we can win back that majority.
Hospital pass number two, Emma Powell, and her departure from the job that you and I put into. There are many people within the Democratic Alliance who tell me that she's been shoddily treated. There are many people in the business community who feel the same way. And not easy to move into a position like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, look, it is a tough position. Certainly in recent years, it's become a very, very, I would say, eventful portfolio. There's a lot going on in the world, and so foreign policy has become quite exciting over the past couple of years. But Emma received a lot of support. She was an excellent MP. She was an excellent colleague. I served with her on the committee for the last year, and we've been friends and colleagues long before that. She received a lot of support from the party. There were protection services provided when she felt threatened. She was provided with a lot of support for all of her overseas trips. She always had a direct line to the party leadership and certainly the party management to assist when she was having issues in the portfolio. But, you know, being an MP, it's an occupational hazard to have to deal with threats and intimidation and harassment. I mean, if you look recently at Dean McPherson with this whole IDT oxygen tender, I mean, he's the minister and continues to receive threats from various interested parties. So it really goes hand in hand with working in politics, dealing with this sort of threats and intimidation. And I'm very happy to say that the DA provides support for all MPs when it comes to the job and the hazards that you do encounter.
Now, the hazards in South Africa seem to be pretty special. The fact that we've got a political killings task team in the SAPS, which has now been disbanded. Anyway, let's not go there. Let's talk about your portfolio and in particular, what's going on in the trade area. Let's start with the 30% tariffs, the Trump tariffs. Thankfully, they're only 30%. He did say we'd get a 10% bonus for being members of BRICS, but that doesn't seem to have come through. But still, 30% is really ruinous for many exporters.
Yeah, look, 30% is not ideal. There really is a sense of negligence, I suppose, that you get from certainly from DTIC and from DOCO, because if you look at all of our SADC counterparts, they've managed to negotiate their tariffs down to 15%. So, you know, in a world where the tariffs seem to be inevitable, I think the only thing you can do is strike the best deal possible as any country negotiating with the Trump administration. And I really don't think that South Africa has put its best foot forward in that regard. We missed the initial deadline. We asked for an extension. We missed the extended deadline. We then sat in a sort of limbo between the deadline for negotiations and the deadline for the implementation, which was the 7th. We've now got the 30% tariff. And I think that the countermeasures that governments have implemented, you know, that this exporter help desk, for example, is really just a contingency measure in the wake of a complete failure on the part of DTIC to negotiate in good faith, I think, with the Trump administration. It's very difficult as well on South Africa's side because, you know, India, for example, did strike a deal and the Trump administration woke up a few days late and decided, no, they're actually going to reverse it. So the environment is incredibly unpredictable, but that doesn't mean that, you know, DTIC should get all scot-free. I don't think that they've done enough. I don't think that DOCO has done enough to preempt and predict what was likely to follow the entry of Trump into the White House. And I just think we've been caught on the back foot on the entire thing.
I saw ahead of this interview, looking at your background, that you've actually worked at the European Parliament in Brussels. Mm. So you must have some deep knowledge then on the fact that there's a lot more to these tariffs than meets the eye. The non-trade barriers, for instance, the subsidies that are paid, especially in Europe, to the agricultural sector. And I guess the Europeans not really complaining that much, being prepared to let American goods come in and they get a tariff of 15%. It's hugely complex. And we've had a number of discussions on this. But I guess that's why you've got to have your best people doing the negotiations and not guys who, you know, with respect, went to the University of Venda and have got a legal degree and are then parachuted into international relations. And then we've got the chairman of MTN that is close to Iran trying to do the discussions. This is it's a very complex area. Who should be in Washington for us right now? And indeed, who should be driving this given its importance to the country?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of competence. You know, there are many people with several degrees working in various different government departments. But when it comes to foreign representation and our foreign missions, you really need career diplomats. South Africa can't afford to have political hacks, for example, or party loyalists in the ANC representing us in key strategic foreign missions such as those in Washington. You know, the US remains our second largest trading partner, so you can't just put any old person there. And certainly with the political environment in the United States at the moment, you can't put anyone who's partial or you know, politically aligned in the way that would spark the ire of the Trump administration. So I don't think that the ANC, which runs DOCO, have really thought it through. We in the DF said that you need career diplomats. You don't need a party political hack. You actually need to find someone who is a trade specialist, who's got a wealth of experience in navigating, as you say, the multi-layered nature of what is happening in the world at the moment with the tariff war. And you need someone who has no party political loyalty or no sort of partial interests to be a sort of non-partial, non-partisan negotiator on South Africa's behalf. You also need someone who's a patriot. You need someone who's going there and saying, South Africa is important. Yes, there are problems. Yes, there are domestic policy issues that we are working towards fixing, but we can't do that without the support of the United States. So I think getting a career diplomat in someone who is skilled in trade negotiations, someone who understands and can navigate the new dynamic that's been presented to us in Washington, is really the best way for us to move forward. But We know that the ANC is very, as I say, they tend to use the diplomatic carpets to sweep corruption scandals underneath. And a lot of our ambassadors and foreign postings are actually former mayors or ministers in South Africa that have been found guilty of corruption or have been facing allegations of corruption, and they end up getting posted abroad in the hopes that, you know, the country will forget about what's happened. So, yeah, it is unfortunate the way that the U.S. posting has taken place, but we've certainly urged governments to fast-track that process. We need representation in Washington urgently, and that needs to happen far sooner than later.
And it's not that we don't have the people around. Just recently, yep. I've done a couple of interviews with a BizNews community member who sent us a mail, Johan Hirman, and he had spent decades at the World Trade Organization. He was the guy there who was in charge of anti-dumping for the whole world. And, well, no, let's rather send the MTN chairman who, I don't know what he was, a school teacher or something before, but whatever. Let's move on, though, because much more serious than this is the misstep that Ronald Lamola made. Now, remember, this was the guy who's being tipped by many as Ramaphosa's successor. I don't know if that Venda University has got anything to do with it, but that's my suspicious mind. But my goodness, what a blue in downgrading the Taiwanese embassy, because Taiwan has got TSMC. Anybody in business knows that TSMC is the world's biggest producer of microprocessors. And those microprocessors are critical for anything today. You can't make for those who don't understand, it's the little silicon chips that go into pretty much everything, and indeed in our country, and motor vehicles. It's almost, for those of us outside of it, like we've got Dunning-Kruger afflicted people making the decisions on areas that they really are clueless on, but that the impact for the country is absolutely massive. Now, I know you've been looking into this whole Taiwanese story. How relevant is it?
It's very, very relevant in the South African context. And, you know, Alec, the broader point that we need to make here is that South Africa is non-aligned. We've been a member of the non-aligned movement for a number of decades, I would say. And certainly as an emerging economy, we must be non-aligned when we approach trade, because we don't have the luxury to pick winners and losers when it comes to our trading partners. And what we've seen is the ANC's sort of party political interests have now infiltrated our foreign policy. And they are not in the interests of South Africa. They don't align with our national interests at all. And so, you know, when we need to approach a non-partisan and a non-aligned approach to trade to really maximize South Africa's export and import markets, we see the ANC taking foreign policy decisions that are crushing that are alienating strategic trade partners, that are, causing us to land in the crosshairs of a tariff war now, for example. So it really boils down to that. And it's Ronald Lamola and Durko's inability to separate ANC party political interests from the national interest of South Africa that is causing all of these problems. It's not in South Africa's interest to take a foreign policy decision that really has far-reaching trade consequences for us further down the line. I mean, the biggest problem facing South Africa is unemployment and inequality. If we're not aligning our foreign policy and our economic diplomacy to address those issues, then what are we really doing, you know, in government? So it makes very little sense from a trade perspective why Durko takes the foreign policy positions that it does. And that's certainly why the DA has been so critical of what Ronald Lamola has done. In terms of Taiwan, it's very, very serious. Access to the semiconductor chips, as you mentioned, is crucial for industry. And, you know, South Africa, again, is an emerging market. We need to be stimulating industry. We need to be growing the manufacturing sector so that we can absorb laborers. We can absorb the type of human capital that our labor market has. The minute we cut off any ability for us to manufacture, it has, you know, far-reaching consequences. And the manufacturing of automobiles, for example, is, I think, the best industry. I mean, I think it was the head of BMW that said you can't even manufacture the mechanism to move your seat back and forward without a semiconductor chip. So that gives you an idea of just how vital these are in the modern computing systems in automobiles alone. And that's excluding all of the other sectors of the economy that are reliant on technology and modern electronic devices. So it really presents a big issue for us.
It's quite extraordinary, really. We've got the ANC saying that it wants to create 100 black industrialists, but they can't get out the starting gates if you can't get semiconductors. And they only come from three places. I'm actually reading a book on this at the moment. It's called The Chip War. Brilliant, brilliant book. And it says that so much of what's happening in geopolitics at the moment is due to where semiconductors are made. And there's only three places: Taiwan, Korea, United States. Chinese don't make them. Chinese assemble them. But so our big buddy, or the ANC's big buddy, is not going to bail us out of this one.
No, it's you know, as I said, it's a ridiculous decision if you look at it in terms of what it does to South Africa and South African manufacturing. And the reason that Ronald Zamola has given for the downgrade of the Taiwanese mission in Pretoria is that it's a recognition of the one China policy, which is completely disingenuous, because we recognized the one China policy in 1998 and up until early this year have had very good trade relations with both countries. And it does seem as if there's been a partisan decision taken with regards to this, as opposed to what is in the national interest, like I said. So there's really no reason why that foreign mission should have been downgraded. We had recognized one China. We have a very good trade relationship with China. But all other democratic nations that have recognized the one China policy have not isolated trade with Taiwan as a result. You know, you trade with Taiwan doesn't come at the expense of trade with China and vice versa. And certainly South Africa can't afford, as I said, to pick winners and losers when it comes to who we trade with. But Taiwan in particular, if we want to stimulate manufacturing and black manufacturing, for example, as the ANC says, we need access to technology like the semiconductor chips, and Taiwan makes the best in the world. So why would we isolate that opportunity and isolate those trade links? We need to trade with everyone. We need as much trade as we can get as South Africa. That's why we are a non-partisan. That's why we have a non-aligned approach to trade. We just need the ANC to implement it.
Ryan, you've walked the corridors, as mentioned earlier, of the European Parliament. You obviously in politics here in South Africa. How would a decision like this be motivated? For those of us outside, you kind of imagine, well, Cyril was talking to President Xi on the phone or some Chinese guy, and he said, hey, you know, just show us that you are on our side and you're against Taiwan. And he then passes it down the line, and Lamola, who doesn't know any better, just takes a decision which is so anti the national interest and so destructive to South Africa's economic opportunities. Is it as simple as that, or is there a quid pro quo coming out of this?
Look, there's a lot of suspicion. I think everyone has their own theory as to why the decision was taken, but it does raise a lot of questions. You know, I think many people looking at South Africa kind of scratch their heads and say, well, why would you self-inflict damage onto your own economy by taking a foreign policy decision, you know, such as downgrading the Taiwanese mission, for example? So, you know, it's difficult to say unless you have any proof of what has or hasn't happened between the ANC and a foreign country. You can't exactly say too much. But I think South Africans do look at this decision and say, well, why? You know, why have we been able to trade with Taiwan up until early January this year, since 1998, and then suddenly overnight there's a decision to downgrade the foreign mission as part of the One China policy? Why do we refuse to condemn the Russian invasion of Ukraine? Why do we give Iran so much free rein in South Africa? And you know, for example, why are they now looking at taking over the Tshwane City Hall? That was a story that's been in the news over the last 2 weeks. And I think if you look at the ANC's relationships with these countries, Russia and Iran in particular, I mean, on the day that the Russian military invaded Ukraine, members of the ANC were at the Russian embassy toasting to the longstanding relationship that the ANC's had with the Russian Federation. So, you know, getting back to the point I made earlier, whatever's happening between the ANC and these countries, we don't know. But it's quite clear that there are party political interests from the ANC side that are influencing foreign policy. And it's fine if the ANC wants to have relationships with these states. You know, we can't control that. But you can't bring the ANC's interests and try and lay them over the national interests as members of the executive. you know, Ronald Lamola is here to serve South Africans. He's here to do what's best for the country, not what's best for the ANC as foreign minister. And that's the issue that we really have with the way in which Durko is being run at the moment.
Well, Lamola has certainly blown any chances he had of succeeding Ramaphosa with two huge blunders already. But I guess it's much more important from a national interest, from a national perspective, on where to from here. What would a truly non-aligned South African policy be? In other words, a South Africa first approach rather than what we have been seeing lately.
Well, that begs the question, really, is that South Africa needs to determine what its national interest is. I don't think we know. I don't think we've actually been able to sit down and determine that for ourselves. So we've always said that we are non-aligned, that we root our foreign policy in the Constitution, and that we act in the best interests of South Africa. Well, what are the best interests of South Africa? What do we need as a country economically to develop? How do we align our domestic policies with what we're trying to leverage from the international space? And, you know, the question there is what's good for South Africa and what's not good for South Africa? And how do we take decisions from a foreign policy perspective that informs that? And I touched on this briefly when I spoke with one of your colleagues on BizNews, I think 2 weeks ago. But, you know, broadly speaking, we need a foreign policy that is undertaken on based on a comprehensive and well thought out long-term strategy for South Africa. Because what we've seen is very much a short-term political tactic as opposed to a long-term strategy that's been well thought out and implemented over a number of years to benefit South Africa on the international stage. We're a middle power in South Africa. We've got an emerging economy, so we don't have much diplomatic clout because we don't have too much diplomatic or economic weight. So we need to work on growing our economy so that we can have a little bit more influence on the international stage. Our main issue is unemployment, so we need to align whatever our foreign policy is and our national interest is with growing the economy and creating jobs. That's the first thing that we need to look at, certainly, from a foreign policy perspective. And we need to determine what trade we need, where we can get it from, and how to leverage it. And we need to really implement international best practice models. India is a very, very good example of pursuing a non-aligned foreign policy because they understand that they need trade first and foremost. So they don't get involved in huge foreign policy disputes or try to pontificate internationally because they focus purely on growing their own economy and doing what's best for Indian citizens. And we need to replicate something similar. You've also got laws.
I know. I opened the door for you to start reading through a statement, and I didn't mean to do that. But I like the point that you made there on India. India's got what 1.3 billion people. We 60 million. It's a rapidly developing economy, but even they can't get it right with Trump. But at least they aren't shooting themselves in the foot with everybody else as well. So. Yep. Ryan, just to close off with here, you guys are facilitating this, or certainly that is the view of most South Africans, that the DA, being part of this government of national unity, has to take responsibility for some of the craziness that we're seeing in the name of the South African government. How do you react to that, and how come you haven't been able to stop this insanity?
Look, I don't think there's any way to appease the Trump administration, whether it's you know, ANC or DA or GNU. I don't think there is a winner, I suppose. I think when you're dealing with the Trump administration, you have to accept that there is going to be a loss at some point. But, you know, the DA is doing everything that we can. John Steenhuisen, for example, as Minister of Agriculture, has tried to offset a likely Trump tariff by opening up new markets for agriculture across Asia. So we've signed new deals with Indonesia, with Japan, with Thailand, and I think with China coming up certainly as well. So there is a way to move around it, and the DA ministers have certainly been doing everything that they can. But here's the thing, is that, you know, if there's a problem with South Africa's domestic policy that the Trump administration doesn't like, that's our problem. You know, Trump is no one has been able to force the ANC to change their terrible policies or make it the ANC better, not even Trump. No one's going to come save us. We have to save ourselves by making better voting decisions and making the DA bigger than the ANC, that we have the numbers in parliament to dismantle bad domestic policy to create better fortunes for us on the international stage.
Mm. Well, we look forward to more conversations with you into the future. Ryan Smith is the DA spokesman on international relations. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.